Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, our guest is a surveillance guy / blackjack AP that we'll call Jackson. Jackson, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So let's talk first about the surveillance part of your world. How did you get started in surveillance, and how high up on the totem pole are you?
I had just graduated college and I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had a buddy back home who had worked in surveillance for a couple of years, and he was like, "Hey, you should, I can get you a job here. Why don't you come in? You'll probably like it." So I just went ahead and did it. That's how I got in. A lot of people who do surveillance, they'll invite their friends in, or they'll hire pretty much anybody. So you don't need to have a college degree, and you definitely don't need to be that smart to work in the casino industry. It doesn't pay you very much money, so there's a very high turnover rate. And I've been doing it for about 4.5 years now.
And are you at the same casino where you started?
Yes. I actually I bounced around originally. I actually left, went to another casino, did a little bit of blackjack dealing. At one point, I was doing blackjack dealing and working in surveillance at the same time, two different casinos, which I think was unheard of. That was kind of difficult to get approved for a long time, but I managed to do that. And now I'm back at the same casino I started at.
And of the two, you preferred the surveillance job to the dealing job, even though I think it would have been less money?
It's a lot less money. I thought I always wanted to be a dealer once I got into surveillance because I fell in love with table games and craps especially. But I really hated dealing. It's very monotonous. The players will sometimes get mad at you. I didn't enjoy it at all. But it did make more money.
So can we say, are you in a small, medium, or large casino, and East Coast, West Coast, or somewhere in the middle?
It's in the Midwest. It's a large casino, the largest in the area. We have a lot of table games, a lot of slot machines.
And how high up on the surveillance totem pole at this casino are you?
I started bet when I came back. I'm still entry level position. If I would have stayed there, I probably could have been a supervisor or a lead or dual rate, but I'm still entry level. I kind of prefer it rather than doing management anyway. It's more fun.
And how many people are in the surveillance room at a time?
Well, you know, every state is different. You know, I've heard that in Vegas, there only needs to be one or two people in the room. When I worked at an Indian casino, there only had to be one person in the room at all times. At my casino, per the state regulations, you have to have three people in the room at all times. So the four people have to be on duty in order to break, you know, let people go on break and whatnot.
I see.
So when you are training a new surveillance guy, how much do they learn about detecting advantage play?
The short answer, virtually nothing. As you first come in, they want to get you started doing things as quickly as possible, just so that you can pull your own weight. Because it's always really hard when people quit and then you have to find someone to replace. And typically the training, all of the surveillance training, takes about 1 year, 2 years to be actually pretty proficient at everything. So, and when the average shelf life of a surveillance agent is 1 to 2 years, the training becomes very basic and limited because they need to train a lot of people in a short amount of time, and people are always leaving. So it's not very advanced training. For advantage play, pretty much the only real countermeasure we have is to do what we call face scans. And you're basically one person on each shift assigned for that day does face scans. And you're doing a face scan once every hour. Now, whether it's at the beginning of the hour or at the end of the hour or in the middle, anytime you want, it's your choice. There's no set time in which you have to do it, but you have to do one every hour. And you're just looking in all the pits at everyone's face to see if there's any known APs. And we have a PowerPoint slide that has a giant list of APs. And basically, this is organized by most recent people who've been caught somewhere. And it's usually within like a 5 or 6 state area. So like all the surrounding states that surround our state, we get hits from them, or we look in OSN for any hits, usually in the Midwest. And we add those names and faces to our slideshow, if they have a name. Some people are unidentified, but if they always have a name, we put it in there.
But how many faces are in this slideshow? And do all the guys actually do it? Or is it like, oh yeah, I did my face scan?
That's a really good question. You're supposed to look in the slideshow every single at the beginning of your shift if you're doing face scans every day. So,
and how many faces are in that slideshow?
It builds up very quickly because, as you know, especially if you're doing the entire Midwest, there are a lot of advantage players that pop up all the time.
Yeah, and I would think there'd be hundreds of slides you would have to go through.
It is. I try to limit, because I do this myself. I work on this, so I'm responsible for keeping this thing up to date. I usually try to limit it to about 75 slides. Because it just becomes too big, and I've made this issue before, but it's almost impossible to like try to remember all these faces.
Yeah, I would think. And so if the guy hasn't been seen in 3 months, 6 months, a year or something, do you take him out of the slideshow at that point?
I usually keep him on the list, but I put him in an area that you do not have to review. So the list could be 2 years of advantage players, but you only have to review to a certain point to where it's within like a 6 month period.
So it seems like you're into this. You're interested in it because you're an advantage player yourself. But do the other guys in the room, do they actually go through it, or is it one of those things that they, just sort of breeze through and go, yeah, I did it?
Yeah, there's a lot of laziness in surveillance. I am one of the only people that's really passionate about advantage play. I consider myself to be more an advantage player than a surveillance agent because I don't really enjoy surveillance, to be honest, all that much. But yeah, there's a couple people in our department who are really sharp and who really want to catch APs as well, and I try to help them. But for the majority of the time, yeah, most people do not want to learn. They don't like blackjack, and they don't like advantage play, and they really don't care. And so what ends up happening is actually we'll have a person on our list who's just been caught. There could be a slide of a new person just caught yesterday on the list, and they'll be playing at our casino, and someone who's doing face scans will miss them because they're just not really caring or paying attention.
And you mentioned databases. Do you contribute to the databases as well as going through them? And which databases do you use?
We only use OSN for, you're talking about surveillance database that goes across the country.
Yeah,
We used to use Griffin when I first started working there. We used to use Griffin. We don't use Griffin anymore. They charge money for that. So we're cheap because surveillance departments don't get a whole lot for their budget, period. So we used to use Biometrica. We no longer use that one anymore. Now we only use OSN. OSN's pretty good.
When you had Biometrica, did you have the facial recognition software?
We've never had facial recognition software. Okay. I don't know any property nearby that has facial recognition software. I don't know how good it is or how it works, to be honest.
Yeah.
But we did use Biometrica simply for their database of APs.
Right. And you would put them into your scans, your daily scans of APs in the area, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Are these pictures divided by in groups like, say, skin tone, you know, white, black, Hispanic, Oriental, something like that, male, female, under 30, under 50 or older, something like that. So if you had 100 people and you put them in those 6 or 7 categories, it would be much easier to find somebody. Do you do that?
Okay. So for the list that you have to go through before doing face scans, it's not categorized like that. It's just simply who's been caught the most recent. They go on top. So I do it in order by dates of when they were last seen in some place. We have an extra, slideshow that has those categories. So if you see someone who you don't recognize and you think they're in an AP, you might go through that list and just search. You can search by, like, you know, white male adult and look at all the pictures of white males and see if this guy matches any of those photos.
So you can also search by Asian, Hispanic, African American. Can you search by age?
No, that's not a thing. Oh. I mean, you could type in their date of birth, and I mean, because we put in their date of birth in that slideshow too. We try to put in as much information as we can get, but sometimes a lot of them are unidentified, or maybe you just get a name.
Right. So is there a specific threshold where it you automatically have to do, or first of all, do you do tape reviews? And is there some threshold where it automatically generates, there must be a tape review?
Definitely. We call them high action. Anytime a player is at a table game, doesn't matter if it's blackjack, could be roulette, could be craps, could be baccarat. The player's at a game and they're up $5,000. We get a call from the pit. Pit goes, hey, this guy's up $5,000. If he has a player's card, they give us player's card. If he has a name, a player's card, that kind of thing. If he's a refusal, we'll just go, hey, he's a refusal. He says his name's whatever, you know, which I usually don't even put that information in there because someone could give any name they wanted to. But then we would log that call, get a face shot of that person at that table. And then we would try to get up. If they're playing blackjack, we get bet shots. So I don't know how familiar you guys are with surveillance, but each table game has a drop-down shot of the table, usually in HD, but it looks straight down at the table. So you don't know if someone's betting $200 in black or $500 in black. You can usually tell that it's multiple chips. You just can't tell how many. So you have to use a camera on, you know, at an angle to zoom in on their wager to figure it. We call that a bet shot. So you can see how much they're wagering every round. And we only do that for blackjack so that, you know, when we have to go back and do a review of their evaluation of their play, we know how much they're betting every hand.
And do you ever review other games besides blackjack?
We have to review every table game, any high action call. So the next day, so for the end of the gaming day, in other words, the next day, we'll get the high action. If that player who was up yesterday, 5,000, if he lost money, then we don't get a high action on him. But if for the entire gaming day, he's up 5,000 or more, then he gets put into the high action. If it's a player we already know, like a regular player who's already had multiple reviews, typically we won't do a review on him. If it's a player who hasn't been reviewed in a really long time, then they might go, okay, we need to do another review on this guy. When that happens, so now let's say there's two players total for the game or for that day who needs reviews for being over 5,000 or whatever. Those then get put into a list, or your name, your surveillance agents will be put into a list, and then they dish out who does the review. So if I'm next on the list, then I'll get assigned Joe Smith, who won $6,000 playing blackjack. So now I have to do a review on that guy from the previous day. So what I do is I look for that high action phone call log, see if I can get a bet shot on him. It's usually 50-50. Sometimes you will not get good bet shots or any bet shots at all. A lot of people are lazy. Some people don't want to. There's a lot of laziness in surveillance. Some people don't want to get bet shots. Maybe we never get a phone call because a table game supervisor messed up and didn't call us for whatever reason. So it's about 50-50 chance if you have bet shots or not. But what I do is I go back to their play, find out what table they were playing at, find out which table they were made the most money at. And that's usually done through a player's card. And then I'll go to that table, go to that time, and start reviewing their play. And I'll typically do a handwritten blackjack evaluation. And that basically just means I'm starting a new shoe. I'm counting the cards each round. Okay, the next round, the count's going to be +3. Okay, what's their wager? And I'm also checking for basic strategy. If they make basic strategy errors, then I have to go and look up our illustrious 18 list, which is a very small list. It's 18 moves. I know 90 indices I use from professional blackjack, Stanford Wong's book. But at our, you know, in our department, we only use illustrious 18. And if it's not on the illustrious 18, then it's considered a wrong move. So it's a limited thing, but you do that and you just go through however many shoes you need. You need a bare minimum, 3 positive counts, 3 negative counts, and we look at all their bets to see if they're following their bets with the count.
That's got to take a long time. That's 6 shoes.
Well, no, you only need however many. You don't need 6 shoes. You need... If you can find a shoe, if you can find a 6-deck shoe that where the running count, when I say not the true count, but a running count of +3 or higher.
Oh, I see.
And a running count of -3 or lower. So if you can get one 6-deck shoe where it's a -3, -4, -5, and then a +3, +4, +5, then that's it. You don't need any more. And we only go off the running count, which is, in my opinion, really stupid because why would an AP be going off the running count in a 6-deck shoe? Doesn't make any sense.
Right. Do you ever send somebody down to the floor to check things out? Any surveillance people ever go down on the floor?
I would love to do that. Some people recently have started doing that as just a little experiment, wanting to go out on the floor and it's not necessarily to look at players, but it's actually to do audits on dealers.
Wow.
50% of the things that we have to do in surveillance are employee audits. And so a lot of times, just as a recent experiment, we've been sending people on the floor, and they'll just stand there and watch a dealer and do an audit on them live on the floor.
Huh. You mentioned that you use the databases. Do you contribute to the databases? And how do you decide who to put in and who not to?
Talking about OSN, because that's the only database we use. We put in everyone who's been identified as a positive winning advantage player. Even if they're in double deck and they're doing a bet spread of $25 to $100, we'll put them in there. We don't really catch too many advantage players in 6-deck. At least high, I want to say high action ones. But, if they're a winning player, if we've determined that they're an advantage player, even if they're not making that much money, we'll put them in OSN. We put everybody in OSN.
How many APs do you think come through your place in a week, in an average week?
The first 2 years I started working there, we don't only do face scans to catch advantage players, unless they got a threshold amount. But maybe only one advantage player a year would actually win over the threshold amount for a review. So,
wow.
Put it in perspective, we maybe catch 5 to 9 advantage players a year through face scans. So when I started getting really into advantage play, I just started counting down every person in high limit. Because it's double deck tables, you can count it down really quickly, and really quickly you can tell who's gambling. And it takes a little bit longer to tell who's being an advantage player, but you can tell within 5 minutes who's just gambling if you count down a double deck table. And when I started getting really into it, I started just counting down everyone, and I'd catch one advantage player per week. And typically these were guys who'd only win $1,000 to $2,000 below the threshold, so they never got reviewed. They never got looked at, and they have never been identified. So when you go from an entire department catching 8 advantage players per year, now catching 1 a week, people were very surprised and they were kind of freaking out initially.
What about other games? Do you identify people, advantage players on other games, carnival games or anything else?
No, nobody really watches carnival games ever. I personally hate carnival games, just watching them, just watching dealers. We do card exposure audit, which means we take 5-10 minutes. We take a camera that's really far away at a good angle, and we look to see if a dealer could be exposing their whole card in a carnival game, such as Mississippi Stud, Ultimate Texas, 3-card poker. Most of the time they're good. I've caught a couple dealers who were actually revealing their whole card. But as for advantage players, we have no idea if an advantage player is actually on that game or what they could be doing to take advantage of it. We don't have charts that say, oh, this is the optimal way to play Texas Hold'em if they know one of the hole cards. So
right.
How would we go evaluating that if we have no idea how to play those games?
So what percentage of time does heat come for a player come from somebody in the pit versus somebody in surveillance just picking it up themselves?
You're talking about if a table games supervisor or whoever is like, hey, I think this guy might be counting cards or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I think this guy might be up to something.
For us, it's very rare. I mean, on our side, surveillance, we don't generally ever look at anyone and say, oh, hey, this guy might be counting cards. I'm typically the only person in my department who's like, oh, hey, this guy's an advantage player. I need to do a rundown on him. And that could be once a week, it could be once a month, but on average, about once a week or once every 2 weeks. But for table games, maybe twice a week, we'll get a table game supervisor who will call and they'll be like, oh, you know, like maybe they say, oh, my dealer said this, or, you know, hey, this guy, he's betting like really big and then he's betting really small. He could be a card counter. And I usually, every time I get one of these phone calls, I just kind of laugh to myself. I'm just like, oh God, here's another one. We have a procedure set in place because when we receive these phone calls, we have to take them seriously and we have to do a rundown, which means it's just a basic look at the count real quick, count down the shoe and just look to see what they're betting. And it doesn't take too long, but I choose not to do that because half the time I'm already looking at that person and I can tell within seconds that they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Table games is really bad about, they don't know anything. I mean, a lot of people in surveillance, they don't know anything either, but in table games, it's even worse. They really don't. There's two people in table games in the entire casino who I actually respect and are very good, very sharp about catching APs. But that's it.
Huh.
What kind of counter detection software is used at your place and how good do you think it is?
It's very good software. if you think about Norm Wattenberger's Casino Verite, it's kind of like that, except it's for casinos. The software, if anybody is, if you have a card counter who's in high limit playing double deck, and they're altering their wager like crazy to throw off surveillance or table games to camouflage their bets, essentially, it's going to pinpoint them no matter what. It's going to catch you. If you get run in the software, there's nothing that you can do to hide what you're doing. And that includes, it has like a 30-page analysis, and it even can figure out if you're possibly shuffle tracking, hole carding, I mean, card counting, obviously. I mean, it's top-notch software. I trust it.
Have you ever had the software tell you someone was hole carding?
No. It says, I've had things say that so many out of so many hands, it's possible that the player was hole carding, but I've never seen a hole carder, to be honest. I've never caught a hole carder, and I don't know if our blackjack games, usually it'd be very difficult to figure out if you could hole card on it. They just, you know, you don't pull the cards out of a shuffler like you do on a 3-card poker game. You're just sliding it out of the shoe. I wouldn't know how they'd go about doing that.
Yeah. So that takes time, right? Is there a way, if you're not there, because you can count somebody down yourself in real time, is there anybody else who can do that, or they would have to do it in a tape review, which might take a day or something, right?
All of our people should be able to count real time. I actually don't know how many can actually do it, because like I said earlier, a lot of people don't care about counting cards. They don't like counting cards. I would think most people, I would think that they would need to pause the tape to count the cards and then write it down. I always do it live because I hate having to take the time to pause the tape, write things down. I just do it live. I know there's a handful of people who can do it live, no doubt, but I think people usually pause the tape and then, sorry, what was your other question?
No, that was it. But also, it sounds like the casino you're at, even though it's a big casino, it doesn't sound like they get really big action if $5,000 is enough to trigger a review on, you know, I mean, there are some casinos where, you know, half the people on the crap table are up $5,000 or whatever.
Yeah, we have a lot of we have one of the biggest baccarat businesses in the area. The thing you have to remember, it's not if any one person wins 5,000, it's who wins that much and hasn't been evaluated before or in the last 6 months. So if we have Tim Jones, who's there every week winning, you know, $5,000-$6,000 or whatever, more than that, but he's been reviewed recently or in the last 6 months, then we're not going to review him. So typically it's one or two people who we haven't reviewed in a very long time, or people that we've never reviewed at all. And that's one or two people per day.
Right. And if the guy's playing baccarat, I mean, what are you going to review anyway? Right. He doesn't touch the cards. He doesn't, you know.
I hate doing baccarat reviews so much. It's ridiculous. Our player evaluations are super time consuming. You have to record how many times they bet on player, how many times they bet on banker, how much are they playing, how many times are they winning, how many times are they losing. It's a very extensive and quite frankly stupid player eval.
Right.
And if they win so much money, then we have to count down the whole baccarat shoe to see if they're betting on side bonuses, which is even more stupid.
When you were a blackjack dealer, did you know how to count cards at that time? And did you evaluate the players at your table?
I learned how to count cards about, I think, 6 or 7 months in, first working in surveillance. I didn't start dealing blackjack until about a year later. And at that point, I was already very good at counting cards. When I was a blackjack, by the time I started dealing, I had already caught in quite a few APs, and I was getting into blackjack. I wasn't playing it yet, but I was starting to get into, card counting, and I would evaluate the players at my table, and I did catch a few, and I did report them to my supervisor, and they didn't really care. And then sometimes they would care. There was one time where I caught one that was well known, and they were like, "Oh, good job. You know, here's a voucher for something."
It was the employee dining room. You can go in twice.
Yeah. I think it was more like a raffle ticket to possibly get something. But then the other times I'd just be like, "Okay, thanks." And then I leave. There's very, very little recognition in table games. All they really care about and all they want you to do is push out as many hands per hour as you can push out, and they want you to give good customer service, and that's it.
Huh. Okay.
I'm sure I saw quite a few Advantage players by telling my boss about them. At the time, I thought I was doing the right thing. Like, I thought I was being a good, honest employee, but now I'm kind of feel differently about it.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, if you're out playing, I mean, obviously you wouldn't want any dealer whose table you're sitting at to do that to you, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. I wasn't playing at the time. I was only doing surveillance and thinking I was doing a good job by catching as many APs as I could. Nowadays, if I ever dealt blackjack again, which I wouldn't, I'd probably be like, "Oh, hey, cool, you're card counting." Like, you know, like, what's your name? How big is your spread? I'd probably relate to them more.
So how much do you play currently?
My goal this year was to play 500 hours. I was trying to play 10 hours a week, but now the coronavirus has, put that on halt a little bit.
Yeah.
But I still think I can crush some. I want to go back. Once casinos start opening up, I want to play at least 15 hours a week to try to make up some lost time.
Before we get into your playing career, we have one more question on your surveillance, and then we're going to do a commercial break, and then we'll get back into your playing career. So on surveillance, when somebody uses a player's card, and so you have information, how is that different than them not having a player's card? Can you make any extra notes or anything like that?
You're talking about if I catch an AP who's using a player's card, how does that affect something? I mean, The player's cards themselves are very detailed. It has your name, your address, your date of birth. It even has your social security number, I think, sometimes. It also tells you your lifetime win-loss. It tells you your yearly win-loss. It tells you your monthly trip win-loss. It tells you the last 30 days of every single table game or slot machine you played and how much you won. Extremely detailed information. We don't ever use that info, really. For example, if I catch an AP, I immediately pull up a table manager program that shows everyone playing in the pits. And I can click on them and be like, okay, this player is playing as a name refusal. He's playing. Here's a description of his play, or I mean, a description of his person. And here's a guy, Joe Smith. Here's his card number. Is he skilled or unskilled? Which I'm not sure how they determine that, but apparently they can. And then you can then look him up from there. And I do that just to see if the AP is actually using a card or not, because we're not allowed to ask APs for their driver's licenses anymore. So if they're not using a
card. What do you mean you're not allowed to ask them for their? Oh, you mean when you're barring them, you mean? When you're backing them off?
Correct. We cannot ask an AP for their ID.
Wow, you're one of the only casinos that that has that policy.
Well, we also can't back them off.
Oh.
We can countermeasure them. We can shuffle the shoe every two hands, or we could flat bat them if we wanted to. But we can't ask them to leave, or we can't ask them to stop playing blackjack, and we can't ask them for their ID. Unless they're doing a cage transaction, but unless they're not getting CTR'd, then they don't have to give ID anyway. So If they're not using a card, then we're not going to get their name. If they're unknown, obviously, if we know who they are, then we already have their name.
All right. So we've been talking to Jackson about surveillance. So he's also an AP. We're going to be talking to him more about that after a commercial break. South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. They did anyway on March 11th. When they reopen, they will have closer to 6,000 games simply because half the machines are shut off. They are expected to open June 4th. We are taping this a week and a half before that, so the opening date could change between now and then, depending on decisions made by the governor. The promotion of the month is called Free Play with a Kicker. Pick up your normal free play Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, and if you do, you are eligible for the same amount of free play on Friday or Saturday of the same week. Do this all 4 weeks, and there is a double amount of free play that you can pick up either on Monday or Tuesday, June 29th or 30th. If the casino opens as expected on the 4th of June, then everybody will have missed the first chance to be there on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, which is fine. You still get credit, and you can pick up your free play amount on Friday or Saturday of that week, and you're still eligible for the end of the month. At predicted.org, there is a market where you can place bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. Most active markets right now are who going to be the vice president nominee and who will win in various states. Gamblers with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. An additional membership, the pro membership, is separately sold at $6.95 a month or $49.95 a year. Listeners can play 1,000 hands for free and try it out at videopoker.com/GWAE. The biggest advantage to this is that it's video poker software that corrects you on both Quick Quads and Ultimate X. All right, we are back with our guest, a surveillance guy and an AP. So now let's talk about players. When you started being a player, how did you get your bankroll? Did you just save it up or somehow other way?
To be honest, when I first started playing, I wasn't even sure if card counting really worked that well. It sounds kind of stupid, but put it in perspective, I actually had there was a 20-year surveillance supervisor who used to work with us, and he actually thought that the house edge in blackjack was 5%. It was like the highest out of any table game. And he didn't think that – he thought that you would break even as a card counter. So when I started playing blackjack, I wanted to see if it would actually work or not, because I had done so many blackjack evaluations to the point to where I'd see players win every hand when the count was negative and lose every hand when the count was positive. And obviously, it's just a short run deal. But I did so many of these blackjack evals that I didn't almost even believe that card counting even worked. I got into it because I wanted to see if it worked and if I could actually do it. I started out with $200, lost it after about a month, gave myself another $200, and then I racked that up to about $1,500 over the course of a year, just playing red chips. You know, I think I was going between $5 and $60 on shoe games.
That's amazing you didn't go broke more than once with... I mean, a $60 top bet with a $200 bankroll, that's...
Yeah.
That's not many bets.
No, I got really lucky. And I knew that my EV was only maybe $1 or $2 an hour. And I knew that I shouldn't have made as much as I did. But, I mean, I figured it worked. So I did something a little crazy that I probably shouldn't have done. And you know, in surveillance, you live paycheck to paycheck. You're never going to get rich working in surveillance, especially entry level. So, I did something a little crazy. I got a really good deal on a personal loan, and I took out a $9,000 personal loan to gamble with and put in $1,000 of my own money because I knew industry. I had read around on the forums and looked online, and it seemed like a lot of guys were like, don't get into card counting unless you have $10,000. So that's what I did. And, I started playing double deck, which I had never played before. First time, was a little, overbetting a little bit because I wasn't doing a good true count conversion on a double deck game when I had primarily only played six deck. So I ended up losing about 15% in my first session, and that kind of freaked me out a little bit. But after that, I went back to about break even, and then after that, for 3 months straight, all I did was win in six deck. I went back to six deck, and all I did was win for 3 months straight. And after that, I think I went on. I actually did go on like a 50 or 60 hour losing streak and gave back about 80%. But then after that, I made it all back again, and now I've already doubled my bankroll, so I'm doing pretty good.
So did you pay back the loan?
I used my winnings and a little bit of savings from surveillance to pay off the loan completely because I didn't want to be in debt.
Yeah.
So that was the smart decision.
Yeah, I would say taking out a $10,000 loan when you're a beginning card counter is not – a prescription for success for most people.
Yeah, no, it was probably a bad idea. But after I started having some negative results on double deck, double deck's so much faster. You know, the swings come and go so quickly. It scared me, honestly. Now I feel very comfortable playing double deck, but I got pretty lucky on six deck, which is what I was already good at. And yeah, it's worked out.
Yeah, if you have a wife who would okay you taking out a $9,000 loan to go gamble with, you are a you have a rare wife.
Hey, you know what though? I got a really good deal on the loan. It was only 6% interest loan, and
oh, okay.
My payments were very affordable. I got a pretty good deal.
So are you on any of the blackjack websites? Do you participate in those, or do other people in surveillance go on those sites?
I'll surf. When I was first doing research into blackjack, I was reading a lot online, and I was going into forums trying to figure things out because I really didn't know how to be a good advantage player. You don't learn how to make money or be a good advantage player when you're in surveillance. You simply learn the count, and you learn how to do blackjack evals. So right now I'm not subscribed or in any forums as a member, but I will go sometimes online and look through the forums and look at different topics if I don't already know how to do something. I'll try to do research through the forums. I don't know of any other surveillance person who does that. Like I said, most of the guys, they don't really care about blackjack that much, or, you know, they might go out and count cards, but they just do it red chip players, you know, bring a couple $100, maybe do it 2 or 3 times a year. They're not serious about the game.
As a player, have you run into situations where you end up playing at the same table as some AP that you previously run off with that player not knowing that you were the eye behind the eye in the sky?
Well, none of the players I have played with know that I am the eye in the sky. I have met and played with quite a few advantage players, especially at the casino that I mostly camp out at all the time, because they are a very forgiving casino. They will let APs play there so long as they're not betting, you know, $500. So I've actually met an advantage player that I actually have kind of befriended. I've actually talked to him for over an hour off the table, and I have backed him off before. And I feel like a piece of crap because he's a really nice dude. And now I'm like, man, I even feel kind of bad not telling him what I do for a living because it feels like I'm just lying to him and he's a good dude.
Don't you think he might recognize your voice if he hears the show?
Possibly. we'll get around to that if it happens. I mean, best case scenario, maybe he just doesn't want to talk to me again. Worst case scenario, maybe he tells the casino I'm a surveillance agent and it ends up biting me in the butt.
Now, what about it biting you? And I mean, have you had any back offs or barrings? And I mean, you mentioned you're in a state where they can't back you off, but I don't know if you've traveled to other places. Have you ever gotten any heat at work because of your playing?
When I came back to work, I was already playing with my bankroll and I was already getting backed off. And I straight up told my boss, I don't want to come back to work here if you guys are going to have a problem with me counting cards. Counting cards is something I want to do every week and I want to make more money doing it. And I don't care if I get backed off or caught, but I'm going to keep doing it. And he's like, that's cool. Come back to work. We don't care. And yeah, I have been backed off in Vegas. I wish I never went to Vegas. That was the first back off I had. Like a beginner noob card counter, I didn't realize, oh, I thought I could go in with a $15, $200 spread on double deck and be okay.
$15 to $200.
Well, that's how beginner I was. I thought that kind of a spread was acceptable. And not only that, but I went to probably the sweatiest casino I could probably go to, which was TI. And I didn't realize that Willie Ellison helped train the people there, and they backed me off within 7 minutes of being in there.
You might be able to beat that record at the El Cortez.
That's what I've heard, but that PI was really good. I was very impressed with their table game supervisors.
Now, we're in an era now that casinos are allowing players to come up to the table wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. Have you played under those conditions, and how do you find it for a card counter?
I'm playing right now. I've been playing this whole weekend. It's great. I think right now it's a good time to be an advantage player. The mask is only kind of a side benefit. I'm kind of iffy about the mask, but I'll wear one. I mean, if a casino's sole deterrent is to just look for APs that have been flyered and you're covering over 60% of your face, how are they going to know that you're the guy who just got flyered? And I mean, but that's just kind of, obviously if somebody looks at the money, you're going to be done. You know, all they have to do is look at your money and count you down. But I think the real benefit from this whole pandemic is that the social distancing, you know, when you get to the table, a 5 or 6 player table, and now you can only have 2 or 3 people at it, which means for me, my strategy for counting is to just camp the spot all day. So if I'm camping the middle spot, I have a guaranteed spot on my left and a spot on my right that's going to be empty. And so now I can go from one hand at minimum bets to playing 2 or 3 hands when the count gets good. As opposed to,
well, it's also faster. It means you're getting more hands per hour.
That too, yes. You get many more hands per hour as opposed to a full table where you might only get 60 hands an hour.
Have you ever gotten an AP flyer on yourself?
I was playing in my hometown one day, and this was, I want to say it was a few months after I got caught in Vegas. I was playing on one of their double deck games and using a player's card because I'd always use a player's card there. And I was just trying to, I don't play there very often, but I was just trying to play there. And if I lost money, hopefully getting some cash back or some free play. And I think I played there for 2-3 hours. I was actually rat holing chips the whole time. So I made them think that I lost $400 and I didn't. So I ended up actually getting some free play back, what ended up happening was I played through for, like I said, 2-3 hours. I left. I went to go to another casino. I'm playing blackjack at this other casino. I'm at the table. I pull up my phone because I get a text message. I usually bring out my phone underneath the table just so I can read my text messages without the dealer seeing. I pull up a text message and it's my face at the casino that I was just at. And it's from my boss, and I'm starting to freak out. I'm like, holy crap, is surveillance watching me right now? Are they zooming in on my phone? Because that's what you can do in surveillance. You can zoom in on people's phones. Are they looking at me? Am I screwed here? But no, they just kept letting me play.
So how often do you do that when you're in surveillance, zoom in on people's phones to see what they're reading?
Not very often. I mean, we do it for fun, usually not with like APs, but like, I work overnight. So like, say like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, you get a lot of meth heads that come in because casinos are open 24 hours. So that happens. If they look like they're a shady individual and you think they might be up to no good and they're busting out their phone, maybe you'll zoom in just to see what they're doing. Maybe they're trying to make a drug deal. Maybe you can actually get an arrest. That's always fun, but like I don't usually zoom in on people's phones that much, but I mean, we do it just for fun sometimes. We actually caught a lady, in our hotel, an employee, at the front desk who was actually, we zoomed in on her phone and she was actually stealing. She was comping rooms for herself and her boyfriend. She ended up getting arrested for that.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think there might be privacy issues on that, but that would be for,
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, we'll have to ask that next time when Bob Nersessian's on our show.
Uh-huh.
So, Jackson, we thank you very, very much for joining us today. This has been informative. We wish you continued success in your career as an AP and surveillance as long as you want to do it. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So, Richard, do we have any recommendeds today?
No, since we taped the show just before this and I already gave my recommendeds then, I don't have any more.
See how you are. Well, I had that many too. So.
Yeah.
So, thank you, Jackson. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.